Welcome to this edition of Sentinel Watch. I'm welcoming to the program Margaret Rogers, a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from Berkeley, California. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Lovely to speak with you. And so we've got a subject on our minds that we're going to address today, which is basically a subject on a lot of people's minds. And it's the concern about the climate and what it's been doing recently and what it's predicted to do in the future. It's one of those subjects where you know you're not going to solve everything in a half-hour podcast, but what is it we can offer that can help people square up to this issue in a way that just enables them to feel more empowered?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a problem that can just feel overwhelming, too big for us to really feel that maybe we individually can make much of a difference. But I think that's the first thing to see through, that we can. I think so often what we need to be doing when we feel like there's a problem that's overwhelming is just seeing what simple thing can I do to contribute. And probably the most important thing we can do is to think more about how can I love? How can I love my fellow beings and the earth? And just look within to see what are those ways that I can help to make a difference and help to know that there is a larger power than me or even the best climate scientists in the world, that there is a larger power that we can draw on here.
Yeah, that's lovely. And that's a divine power, isn't it? The divine power of mind or divine mind, which is God, love. And we each have equal access to that power. And it takes some cultivating as well, doesn't it? Just to feel that sense of divine power, of God's love with us, and how to access it in a way that really makes a tangible difference.
Yes. For many people, they may think somehow of religion and science being opposed to each other. But I think with the definition of Christian Science that I've learned, they actually are inseparable, that science and love are inseparable. You could say that science in some ways might represent intelligence, and love represents the way we need to practically act.
Uh-huh.
And so they really are interdependent. Science won't solve the climate problem without love. Love is going to be the primary motivator of healing in the climate.
That's very thought-provoking in itself. And for some people, that might demand, you know, a little bit of reorientation. But it is very empowering because everyone can work on how to better understand what love is and how to better express it and live it.
That's it. It really is a common love for our beautiful planet and atmosphere. Uh-huh. And just wanting to preserve that for generations to come. Otherwise, you could say, well, those of us who've been on the planet for a while, why should we be so concerned?
Uh-huh.
But it's for our children, of course, and for all the creatures on Earth, that it's not just about what is this doing for me, it's what can I do for the welfare of humanity and nature. It's interesting, in the first chapter of Genesis in the Bible, it describes the heaven and earth as created by God, and then that God gives man, or human beings, dominion over all the earth. And that word has been much discussed over the centuries, that it doesn't mean dominance over the earth, where you can just do anything you want. It means really how to care for the earth. And I just love thinking of that, that this higher power intelligence that we call God has given dominion, a way of understanding how to care for the earth. We have it. And so I think more than ever, we're just really learning how we need to find out what that dominion is and how we can exercise it intelligently.
Yeah, it is a sense of this kind of authority that we have through our understanding of how we're really spiritually created by God, that that we have this ability to make a difference to what we see. And whether it's on the micro scale or the macro scale, every bit counts. And we can start flexing those kind of spiritual muscles in our day-to-day lives and prove that.
Yes. The Christian Science Monitor reported on a recent poll by the Pew Research Center that over 90% of people in the United States believe in a higher power or God.
Right.
And I have a feeling that's not unusual around the world either. We hear about societies that are very secular, non-religious, but while there may be a rejection of what they see as conventional religion, it doesn't mean that they don't believe in a higher power. And I think if you really dug into that, what is this higher power? A lot of people would probably agree that it could be defined as love, that there is just something so innate in all of us that wants to help, wants to even sacrifice our own benefits for the sake of helping someone else. And so we can really have such a sense of encouragement that the majority of the world's people believe in that higher power.
Yes, well, that is encouraging. That devotion to goodness, that devotion to caring.
Yes.
You know, I definitely would say that although it's not those people who always get the news headlines, that's what you feel most of the time when you're just interacting with people. I mean, for instance, I had a conversation yesterday with a neighbor and his family had really stepped up to try and help the environment. They decided they'd get rid of one car and get an electric car in order to help the environment.
Mm-hmm.
There are people like him all over who are just...
Exactly.
They're doing that. They're taking those steps to the best of their ability.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's where every individual can have a sense of what prayer means to them in their life. It may not be a traditional sense of praying of certain words, but Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science, said that prayer is desire and that we want to really see if I can purify my desires, or another word for it would be unself them. Can I think less about myself and my own wants and preferences, and more about how I can help and bless others? I mean, that's a prayer, to want to be more unselfish in the way we act. And there's something each of us can do every day about that. If we even just think about, am I perhaps needlessly using materials that I don't need to, an excess of packaging, an excess of plastic, whatever it might be, to be thoughtful is a way of praying. It's putting the higher good above your own needs. We have a store that's open near me where you can take your own bottles in and you can get laundry detergent, you can get soap, lotions, whatever you need, but you don't have to get all the plastic containers. You can just take your own and refill them. I think somebody had this idea of that was their way of loving and praying, really, for the climate. And there are just so many ways in just small things in our daily act, if we're a little more paying attention and thoughtful. That, to me, is just the heart of prayer. It's how we're living and how we're keeping thought on a higher goal than just our own personal wants. I'll give another one. The Christian Science Monitor has been so good at reporting on the climate issues. Back in November 21, they had an issue on saving of water in the southwestern United States. There's a huge dam project on a lake called Lake Mead, and that water serves a number of southwestern states and Mexico. And basically, all these different interests are in competition for that water, and that's been going on for years. But they've begun to see that they share that water, and no one can dominate it. And so they are learning that the only answer to saving that lake is sharing and really seeing what is an equal, just way to share it instead of competing for it. And that article to me was so encouraging because it said that's natural to humanity to share. It's not right. natural to be in competition and be selfish. And the fact that that is happening in small ways all over the world will just give us that courage to say, yes, we can do more to unself every day in our own thinking and just less of what I want or thoughtlessly use and more of what really will help contribute to a purer atmosphere.
I love that phrase, unselfed love. What about that phrase you used, ideas? I mean, everyone knows what an idea is, but that's a great innovation. And I guess, how can we support more of those innovations and ideas coming forth?
Yes. Something else I have been thinking a lot about is a statement in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, which is the textbook of Christian Science. And she has the most interesting way of describing Jesus. She said, Jesus of Nazareth was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe.
Mm.
And then she explains why that's so. He plunged beneath the material surface of things and found the spiritual cause.
Right.
And that's a wonderful definition of science, really, that the physical sciences, even, they're always looking beyond what just is the surface appearance of things and asking, what is causing this?
Mm-hmm.
And we can all be more scientific in our approach to life, too, in saying, if the primal cause is what we call God or this higher power of love, then there is always something we can do. There's never a situation where we cannot bring love to bear on it. And like those people in the southwestern states, they found sharing was better than competing. Well, that was plunging beneath the surface of things that says there's just a limited amount. And it was finding, no, through love, there'll be enough for all of us. To me, that's really what Jesus came to prove to us, that there was no situation where love could not bring a solution. There are just countless experiences in the Bible of that, but in his life in particular, stilling storms or providing food in the wilderness where it looked like there were no supplies. Just again and again, he was proving that there is a higher power that is all-inclusive love and that it will provide the answers and direction that we need. So we have a great rock to stand on in knowing that these things have been proven and that healing has happened because of taking that stand for God's omnipotence.
Yeah. And when you're talking about digging deeper beneath the surface there and finding that primal cause, it just reminds me of an experience. This is a little while back. We had a big oil spill in the United Kingdom in the Shetland Isles. And it's one of the things where I thought, well, this is a big thing. Does it make any difference to think about it spiritually and approach it in that way? And I did, and I certainly was not alone in doing so. And I know that because someone wrote an article about this experience in the Christian Science Sentinel, which this podcast relates to. And just to cut a very long story short, the oil spill was really being dreaded because there was twice as much crude on that boat as there was on the Exxon Valdez, which obviously was a tragedy in Alaska. And all of it spilled out. I mean, it was devastating. But on top of that, there were all these winds that stopped anyone getting there to do anything about it. And as I said, I know many, many, many people were praying, and I was one of them. But this person who wrote the article was also able to report how she had approached it. And one of the ways she approached it was she was thinking about the wind that was threatening the people so that they couldn't approach the oil spill. And there's a definition of wind in the Christian Science textbook, which you mentioned, Science and Health, which is about God's government in a nutshell. And she began to think about this deeper idea of what wind represents spiritually and got some really clear inspiration. And it turned out, and this is on record, those winds broke up the oil spill and sent the oil away from the islands. And there was some damage, but it was very, very minimal to sea life compared to the devastation that was feared. And I thought that that ability to step up the plate and say, yeah, well, I'm not even there. I certainly can't do anything practical, but I can contribute something here. And that's to shift my thinking in a way that might contribute and make a difference.
Yes. Yes. That power of thought that's based on the universality of love, that love is everywhere. There's no place where people can be separated from love. There's a statement in Science and Health that divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. And though it looks like there are so many needs that are not being met, the power of knowing that healing has happened because of taking that stand for God's omnipotence.
And healing's a good word. I was just thinking also about, you know, the phrase has become more common about climate anxiety. And I remember when I was growing up, that one of the big fears was nuclear annihilation.
Yes.
And how can we sort of help people who are feeling that level of sort of fear and anxiety to sort of feel what we're talking about a bit more, that they can be part of the solution rather than just needing to stay in that place of fearing the problem?
Well, gaining trust in this higher intelligence, or what we could call divine love, God's love, it really does take concerted effort. It's not just, oh, I wish I had more faith. It requires work. And I think that's what the great scriptures of all the world really are for. They're there to provide an education for us. Education means to lead out from just the appearance of things, which can look so dangerous and chaotic, and remind us that there is this universal intelligence that is love, that we call God, that is always present to guide us. But that really does require a daily discipline of realizing that and turning to it. And this is what I think the world so much needs. There's such a pandemic of listening just to constant news and things on the internet that are just stirring up fear and anger.
Right.
And to see there is a better way for me to occupy my thought if I want to make a difference, then it's going to be in going to these timeless, eternal statements of what really governs the universe and becoming grounded in the reality of goodness and the reality of love to heal. So that just feels crucial to solving these great problems, is for more people to just become grounded in the truth. And I'm including myself in that, certainly. We have these examples, and like Jesus Christ, where someone is so grounded that they can be asleep on a boat in the middle of a storm and be awakened and calm that storm. Is that just a miracle, or is that an understanding that there's a divine intelligence that governs all, and that disaster is not part of God's plan? And to live so close to God as these great spiritual seers have done in all the world, to live that close to God is to have a real power to heal and to change experience. So it's something we should all feel we can do better at, devoting ourselves to that kind of understanding.
Yeah, the more we talk about this and some of the different aspects of it, you know, the more it occurs to me that, yes, there's a huge environment out there that might seem overwhelming because of all the potential and actual problems in it. But literally, the starting point for anything we do and really a powerhouse for everything we do is the environment of our own thought.
Yes.
Which we have direct access to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yes. Yes.
And that is quite helpful to realize, isn't it? That that's a place where we can really start to make a difference. It will change our actions, mm-hmm. but it also helps us contribute to the larger sort of direction in which human consciousness goes as a result of
that's
what
right.
we're offering.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can think of, you know, say there was an emergency of some kind and people were just terrified. If there's one calm person that can just yeah. help to calm people down and say, no, let's do this, what a difference it makes. I'm sure probably all of us have had some experience of that in our life,
yeah.
where just one individual made a difference in changing the atmosphere. Well, we all want to be those people.
Yeah, we all want to play our part in that. And I love how you said that because it one person who's calm enough to do something,
yes.
as opposed to just being calm and letting everything carry on. It's that combination, isn't it? It's like,
yes.
I've got this ability to calm my fears through an understanding of that underlying mm-hmm. principle, actually, is another way we
yes.
Can think of God, the divine principle, that underlying foundation of that one principle. But it doesn't leave me there just feeling comfortable. It means I am inspired to see what steps to take in order to help this solution come through that's needed at the moment.
That's right. Yes. Again, to see that this conviction of the unity of humanity is so important to gain, because so much of what we're dealing with climate is, of course, human actions on the environment, and many of them selfish, not necessarily going out to be selfish, but just not thoughtful, not thinking, how might this impact someone else? And to be constantly cultivating a desire to be unselfish, to really think about how is what I'm doing affecting others, would really be important. And I just read this very interesting example of this. There's a Zulu word, Ubuntu, and it's about a state of thought in this African culture. And I read it was a study by an anthropologist, and he said he had shown a game to the children of this African tribe. He put this basket of delicious fruit under a tree and told them the first child to reach the tree will get the basket. They were standing some distance away. So he gave them a start signal. And instead of them all racing, they joined hands and they walked together toward the tree.
Right.
And when he asked them, why did you do that? He said, they answered, Ubuntu, which means, how can one of us be happy while the rest are miserable?
Wow. Yeah.
But that just struck me. What a wonderful attitude to think about our own actions. You know, is there any way that the action I'm doing could be less selfish, could be more thoughtful of others? That would really create a new world.
It would. It would. But there's a wonderful idea that Mary Baker Eddy shared on that, which I think shows the downside of not realizing Ubuntu, if you like. It says, only by admitting evil as a reality and entering into a state of evil thoughts can we in belief separate one man's interests from those of the whole human family,
yes.
or thus attempt to separate life from God. So if we are doing that, it's actually a spiritual problem in our environment, in our mental environment, because, you know, this is suggesting that we're allowing a sense of separation from divine life, God, which none of us truly wants. At the end of the day, God is infinite goodness. Who would want to be separated from that?
That's right. That's right.
You know, that we can't separate our good from anyone else's.
Yes.
So if we think we've got good that is somehow separate to everyone else's, we're actually misguided. We're fooling ourselves.
Yes.
And that comes back, I think, to the fact that we have this one divine source, this one Father, Mother, God. And a way of describing all of us is the family of God, you know, God's family.
Yes, that's right.
And so just like we would try and help our own families, you know, this is not a sort of one world sort of happy sort of people kind of thing. It's much deeper than that. It's this spiritual reality of a unity that God has created that we are uncovering step by step as we really understand our relationship to God as God's sons and daughters.
You know, to me, what I just think of this as you were speaking, what we're really describing is that first part of the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come, you know, God's kingdom come. We are not divided into cultures and races and economic strata. That we really just want the kingdom of God to be realized in our world. And when we say, thy kingdom come, to really mean it, to really desire that all people be blessed, and all animals, and all of our earth.
That's brilliant. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground there. Thank you, Margaret, for all those wonderful, helpful thoughts. And thanks for coming on the program to talk about this big issue that, you know, is of concern to people. We hope we've given them some really helpful thoughts to think about and take forward. So, yeah, much appreciation.
Oh, you're so welcome. I just think of a line that's helped me so much over the years, that comforters are needed much of Christ-like touch. And we can all be those comforters.
Oh, that line's wonderful. It's by A.E. Hamilton, and it's quoted by Mary Baker Eddy in one of her writings. But I just think it's such a precious line. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you all for listening to this program. I've been talking to Margaret Rogers from Berkeley, California. I'm Tony Loebel, and this has been Sentinel Watch.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.